What's up, everyone? Thanks for listening to another episode of Full Stack Whatever. I am your host, Michael Lomans, and today I am joined by Jeff Sheldon. Jeff is the founder and CEO of a company called Ugmonk, which a lot of you may already know. Started as this apparel company and was known for their really ornate ampersands, but has since turned into a company that also focuses a ton on desk organization and office organization and making these really beautiful artifacts that you can see sit on your desk and can help you organize your life on a day-to-day basis. But yeah, anyway, welcome, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's definitely a winding path, so we'll try to navigate my wild, weird journey as much as we can.
I'm super excited to hear like how it all started and how it got here. So I often like to start with, let's start at the beginning. How did you get into design? How did you get into the field?
Yeah, so we'll start at the very beginning. As a kid, I was the kid that was just into everything art. As soon as I could hold a crayon or I could build with Legos, I could paint, I could make things out of Play-Doh. I just loved it. I thought that was normal. I thought all kids like that. As you get older, you realize that some kids are like, nah, I'm not really into this whole drawing thing. But whether I was drawing airplanes or sports cars or whatever it was, I was copying mascots from like NBA teams. And I try to make that Charlotte Hornets logo. I just found so much satisfaction in making and building and creating. And that stuck with me. And I dabbled in all sorts of fine art growing up as a kid, figuring out, do I want to do oil painting? Do I want to be an illustrator? Do I want to be a sculptor? And I tried everything and I enjoyed all of it, but nothing specifically stuck out. And then once I was moving on and thinking like more about a career is when I got introduced to the world of design and graphic design. I really didn't know anything about it. And I was actually thinking I would go into study 3D animation because Pixar was just at its heyday and we thought it was so cool to see Toy Story and to see these 3D animations that we had never seen before. And as I learned a little bit more about that, I realized this is way too technical. It's a different type of brain to animate and very, very detailed type of on the technical side. And I was more like, graphic design seems like a great thing because you get to create, you get to use digital tools, but you're still creating out of nothing. You get to start with that blank page. I think the same principles of art and coming from an art background, color theory, composition, understanding scale, hierarchy, all led me into design. And then I just fell in love with like typography and the great designers and studying the history of graphic design. And that's how I went from fine art into graphic design. And it was early web days, early digital days. There were still flash websites and things like that.
That age old time when I remember when Apple all of a sudden was like, well, nope, we're not going to do flash. And then everyone's like, okay, yeah. I guess this is happening now because you couldn't do anything powerful in a browser unless you were using Flash. And then there were also a lot of companies that were just obsessed in doing insane stuff. I recently saw that Too Advanced had relaunched. I haven't really.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that. But yeah, I remember seeing their site and my mind just being blown. Like, how is this possible?
Everything needs to flash when it comes onto the page at least 7 times and grow. Yep. And yeah, it was really aggressive. And every year or every half a year, they would do a new one. And you would just be like, it would just be a new sizzle reel for like the tech or like the design language that they were using. One of the things that we have in common is that I try to get into 3D, especially if it's like related to game modeling. But same as you, I had a really hard time dealing with there was like so much like extra secondary knowledge that you needed to gather to like really understand how this worked. And it was very daunting. I think nowadays, because there's so many tools and I see a lot of people also use their iPad for it. There's a lot of like 3D drawing you can do now versus the having to make a box and extrude things from a box scenario.
Yeah, it's funny because it's actually come full circle and we'll probably get into this later in the discussion with the Gather desk system and the analog products that I'm designing, but I'm trying to get back into learning some CAD and some basic CAD. I have a 3D printer sitting here next to me because I want to be able to prototype. And I've been doing some like rudimentary prototyping and learning 3D using Shaper 3D on the iPad. It feels more natural to be able to pinch and zoom and move around things. But it's come full circle to the point where like now I am doing some of that technical CAD work to create products, which is very different than creating animations. Like to create, you know, A Bug's Life or Toy Story, there was still a lot of creativity and more of that open-ended organic forms. And the stuff that I'm doing now is more technical, but it still feels like there is a big disconnect from the 2D and the 3D world. Like you really have to like, the tools are different, the interfaces are different. And just the thought process is different. But I come full circle and back to that. I'm not animating anything and I'm not planning on getting into that. But the ability now that we have with these 3D printers that are super accessible and to be able to rapidly prototype is something that I'm just picking up now, 15 years into doing this.
I like that you're saying now that you're not animating and then 5 years from now, you're going to make like an egg.
Never say never. Yeah.
What are those things called? They're the moving sculptures by this Dutch artist. I always forget his name, but he like always puts them on. He puts them on the beach and then the wind just propels them forward.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Those are like the kinetic structures, sculptures.
Yes. Yeah. Theo Janssen is his name. Yeah. Those things always blow my mind. I'm like so impressed by it. Something that probably has a very simple mechanism in it that is just replicable and then just like, keeps on moving and keeps on pushing itself forward. At a certain point, did you spend time in between your graphic design part of your career and starting off Ugmonk?
Yeah, so just dabbling in all forms of graphic design, digital design, web design, like basic HTML. I mean, we were trying to like code stuff in Flash and building our own like portfolio sites in Flash. And even that to me was like really stifling and really hard. Like my brain was not working there. I knew what I wanted to animate. I knew what I wanted it to look like. And I worked at an agency for 2 years right out of college. And in that time, I started Ugmonk on the side. And before that, the way that I got into designing t-shirts was not because I was like obsessed with t-shirts. I loved collecting them or anything like that. It was simply because there was a site called threadless.com and mm-hmm. designedbyhumans.com. And they were both very similar. And a friend of mine had entered, and the way it worked was you basically mocked up your design on a t-shirt. You submitted it. Everyone votes on it. And this was a huge community. I mean, there's thousands or tens of thousands of people voting on these things and early web days. And he won one of the competitions. He's like, hey, you should try this. And I'm like, I guess I've never designed a t-shirt before, but I was having fun learning Adobe Illustrator and getting my feet wet in design. So I gave it a shot and then ended up winning one of those competitions. And I was like, this is incredible. They printed the shirt. They sent me like 5 of the shirts, and then it was available for purchase. And that was like the aha moment of, wow, I just made a physical thing. Like the idea in my head to a digital device, to a physical thing that connected back to that childhood experience of, I can take this duct tape and the cardboard and I can stick it together and make something. Like this wasn't a thing and now it's a thing. And the big aha moment was like using a digital device and tool to create something physical, taking it from sketch to digital back to physical was like the big unlock. And that still is like the loop in my mind that I love kind of ideating, creating, and then having a physical product that you have literally sitting on your shelf halfway across the country. That whole process was just like, man, I loved everything about it and got me into the world of t-shirt design and designing for physical products. But I didn't come from like an industrial design background. Never really thought about designing products. I just thought I'd design stuff for the web and I would do branding and I would do logos. And then the shirts was like, wow, this is pretty cool. Now people are wearing my art and they're wearing it around the world. And that felt really validating as an artist and as a designer.
And so did you immediately go into, okay, I'm going to start a company designing t-shirts? Or was there like a moment of realization that was in between there?
Yeah. So the way it came about was I was like, this is great. I got $500. It was like, at the time, I was just like, this is insane. I created a design from nothing. I entered a contest. People really liked it. I got $500. I got the shirts. Well, I did that a few more times and kept entering these contests. Some I won, some I didn't. But after I won 4 or 5 times, I was like, this is really fun. This is really good. I can't really make a living off of it, but it was cool. But then I realized they were selling thousands and thousands of this one shirt that I designed. And I'm sitting here with the $500 check, which initially felt like life-changing. So I said, what if I just design my own line of shirts and maybe I could, I don't know, build a website somehow and I'll try to sell them. And that was literally the idea. It was not to start a business. It was not to compete with these design sites. It was literally just, I think I have enough of my own designs that I can probably create my own thing. Don't need people to vote on them. I don't need to go through that. I'll find a screen printer that can print some shirts. Did all the research. It was back in the days of forums where there was like t-shirt forums, t-shirt design forums. And it was like a small community of people that were sharing resources and how they were printing different types of inks. That's the start of Ugmonk. I called up my brother, or I probably sent him a DM on whatever, Yahoo Messenger, whatever we were using back then, and said, hey, he's a software developer and he knew how to code. So I said, hey, can you help me build a site for this little side project? I think I'm going to try selling shirts just on my own rather than doing these contests. Totally was not a business. There was no business plan behind it. There was nothing other than I think I can do this myself. And that's when UGMonk started in 2008.
So I have two questions. One, where does the name UGMonk come from?
Yeah, so we've never revealed where the word came from, but basically it's a made up thing that we said when I was looking up URLs back then. I was like, I don't know, I guess I need a URL. I guess I need a logo. Like, it was completely after the fact. And we started Googling all these words and finding was anything open. And we're goofing around and saying, it was open and we grabbed it and we ran with it. And there was no other UGMonks. If you searched Google, there was like one or two other results in another language. Now, if you search the word UGMonk, there's 100,000 or 200,000 results from backlinks that come back to us. But mm-hmm. a happy accident, because it didn't mean anything. It didn't have any longevity to it. It wasn't like this big branding exercise or focus group. We just went for it and it's lived on. Here we are. Probably if I went back, I would have named it something else, but it's become part of the brand.
That's funny. So the first run of t-shirts, how many shirts did you make?
So we printed... this is a story I haven't told for a while. We printed 200 shirts. There was 50 of each shirt, four different designs. So I was like, I'll launch with four designs. I built this, what I thought was a pretty cool website. It had like wood grain background and lots of drop shadows. And it was like very rudimentary. It didn't even make any sense looking back, like why there was wood grain involved in that, like this minimal thing. But it was just like, I was just starting in design. And one of those four designs was actually misprinted, and the printing on it was so thick and rough from the screen printer that it never even made it onto our site. So I launched with three designs and I had a box of 50 shirts. I didn't feel right about selling because the quality wasn't there, but launched with those three and then started to get a few orders. I reached out to people that had bought from the forums and from those t-shirt communities and was like, hey, I just launched my own little thing. If you're interested, check it out. And then got a handful of orders. It was probably less than 10 or 20 orders. But it was that moment of validation to say, this is going to work. Like, people are buying it from me. That they didn't have to go through these t-shirt contest sites. And that was the start of UGMonk. And it has been a winding road since then. But I will say, the one thing that has remained true is we still continue to have trouble getting quality product from manufacturers. And I'm still sitting on product in our warehouse that I don't feel good about selling, because quality is such an important part of the brand and it matters so much to me, that we actually started off that way. And if you look, like just last week, we had a batch of products, not great. They never made it onto our site and I have to figure out how to sell them at a discount or something. But it's interesting to bookend that whole journey with, it's still very much the same. It's just changed from t-shirts to other office accessories.
Yeah. And it seems, so while you were talking, I was going to to archive.org just to see when it all started. So yeah. This is like late 2008.
Yeah.
Like when the first Snapshot landed.
Yeah. That was when I kicked it off.
That's amazing. That's super, super awesome. And it's too bad that a lot of the archive.org websites are obviously crumbling in a way. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that stands out, and I'm going to take a screenshot of this, and maybe someday when I do multiple different types of media on the podcast website, I can post it, is that there's a giant spike in recrawling happening at the end of 2013. So my guess is, was that when the first Gather set came out, or like when you ran the first Kickstarter campaign?
That was, that's a good question. The first Gather set was 2017. 2013, I'm trying to remember if there was a moment that happened where something, we got featured, but back then, there was pre-social media. There was no Twitter, Instagram. YouTube was in its infancy, which is crazy to think about. But I wasn't doing any advertising. So it was all of my traffic relied on blog coverage and features. So a site like Uncrate or Swiss Miss or like all of these, you know, as designers, we would all visit the same like 15 sites every day. You'd log in, check your RSS reader. I actually really miss those times because I feel like there was a collectiveness where we were all looking at the same things and shared interests. But if we got featured on, like when Tina from Swiss Miss would feature us on one of her just little blog articles, like we'd see a huge spike in sales. And it was amazing for a little designer. I was in Vermont at the time. My wife and I were in a little studio apartment selling shirts, and I was still working full time. She was working full time. But when we got featured on a blog, we'd all of a sudden see like 50 orders come in, and it was just like life changing, but it was completely out of our control. But the impact that free publicity had put us on the map. That's what started to spread the word and get UGG Monk all over the world. And people from the Europe and from Australia and from Canada would start to place orders. And I was like, this is crazy. Like, how are they even finding us? And then you realize how the web just transform or goes across any country or boundary. And we were shipping products to places I had never heard of, which was pretty cool.
Google Analytics was like pretty fresh, and Sean Inman had made this thing called Mint.
Yeah, I remember.
You could use for like your web analytics. But did you have like any reasonable amount of analysis of like where you were getting linked from?
I think it was just Google Analytics. And so we used a site called Big Cartel, which was like a pre-Shopify e-commerce platform. Very simple, really clean design, was really easy to get running. And I think they had some analytics in there that would tell you where you're getting things were coming from. But sometimes it was like, I don't know where it's coming from. And I'd have to find out like who's linking to us right now. And it was like the surprise and delight of like, you wake up and be like, what? I just made it on Uncrate. And it's, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. And because when you got featured on one of those blogs, then all of the smaller blogs would all be looking to them and featuring the same things. And this trickle down effect happened. And I would just send personal emails to them, like people that ran. I would try to find the author behind different design sites and just be like, hey, I'm doing this thing. If you like it and want to feature me, here's my photos, here's this. Wasn't even offering discount codes or anything like that. Just trying to outreach and be like, hey, I think your audience would like this. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. But it was such an organic, like personal approach, and something that I've tried to keep true to with the UGG Monk brand is like still, it's still very personal. It's still me. And now I have a team with me, a small team. There's three of us full time. But like, it's still very much a personal thing. And I think that part of the web and that tight design community is what I like. I crave. I wish we could go back to the even the Brooklyn Beta days where it felt so much like we all had each other's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a moment of these, the three t-shirts, the four t-shirts that end up being the three yep. t-shirts. What was the next wave of products? So those, my guess is, did you sell all 150 of those? Like
over
first?
Time, I think when we sold, I think I sold maybe about half of them, and I said, okay, this is working. I'm going to reinvest that money. So I didn't touch any money from the business for the first 2 years. Every single everything that came in, I bought more inventory. I bought a label printer. I bought little plastic shelves. Like everything just went right back into the business. And so as those shirts were selling down, and then instead of buying more of the same, I decided to launch three or four more. And then that's when I launched the shirt that had the big ampersand on it. It was a gray, heather gray shirt with the black ampersand. And then on the bottom of the ampersand, it said, "Then I woke up." And the shirt was called, "And Then I Woke Up." Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, at that time, ampersands really struck a chord with, with designers. I think it's designers still have an affinity for the ampersand symbol. And that's when it like, it took off, meaning instead of selling 10 shirts, we probably sold 50 or 75, still very small scale. But that put us on the map with so many different design sites. And it was like, okay, this is a whole different ballgame than just selling five shirts a week. And people really resonated with that. So I just played off that, started doing different colors of that design and expanded from there and started slowly growing the collection to 10 shirts, 15 shirts, or 15 designs. And alongside that, I think I had started launching some posters. So just 18 by 24 screen printed, same designs. But I was like, these, not everybody wants the design on a shirt. They might want it on their wall. And the prints did okay, but they never sold as well as the shirts, which made me just double down on shirts, thinking like, this is a really cool, it's an affordable and accessible way to get my art out there onto a shirt, because you can never have too many t-shirts. Whereas wall space, you run out of, or you don't want to frame things. So yeah, I branched into prints. And then from there, I think the next thing was some leather goods. Leather journals and the leather mouse pad, which kind of had a life of its own too, where people were coming and buying our leather mouse pads. And that kind of bridged the gap from apparel to wall to office, which doesn't really make sense when you look at all of it. But then if you like see the connection points, you realize like how I leapfrogged from one thing to the next.
I found a tote bag running through the Internet Archive just now, and like a mug, but it's like the, like all the adjacencies. I think that the fact that you had the mouse pad and that had a life of its own, and then now where the company sits, like working so much on organizational and like general like desk and off and like office equipment, like it's that I think is like maybe something that rhymes back to that moment. When did you decide that you were going to make a ampersand statue?
Yeah, so that's kind of a statue, right? Yeah, that's like kind of a funny story too. So I was invited out to San Francisco. There was a store out in San Francisco that I'm blanking on the name, D-Structure or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they're still going, but invited me out to do like a little pop-up. And here I am like running this business out of my tiny apartment. Not a real, I didn't feel like a real legitimized brand, which I think is the whole imposter syndrome that we all struggle with forever, right? Like when am I actually a photographer if I take pictures, and when am I actually a legitimized brand? But I said, sure, I'd love to do it. I'll fly out. I'll ship some boxes of shirts out and we'll set up a little pop-up. Didn't know much about it. Didn't know what to expect, but along that, they had asked for if we had signage to display. And I said, well, I don't really have signage. But then I started talking to a friend who I knew had a CNC machine that could mill wood. And I said, let's make some signs. Let's make our logo, the Ugg Monk logo, in a big wood sign. And then let's make this ampersand, which I had just recently launched as part of the leather goods line that's embossed into all of our leather goods. And we had fun trying to figure out how to make the wood sturdy enough and what material. And then we put a little magnet on the bottom so that it stands up. And it's this big 12 or 14 inch wood statue of an ampersand. We made one of those because it was expensive. I made one sign and one of those ampersands and put those out at this show in that shop. Well, people came out to the shop for the show, which was also crazy. They came out to the show and they were looking at the shirts and people were really excited to meet me, which was a weird feeling because I'm just a kid at the time making shirts. But they came and they were like, oh, how much is this? And they all kept going to the wood ampersand. And I was like, that's just our sign. I can't sell that. I would have to sell it for, I don't know, $300 because it's a one-off custom piece, hand finish, all this stuff. And they're like, okay, well, tell me when you're making them. I want one. And like several people kept saying that, like, I want that sign. I want that in my house. So we did a small run of them. I got back and I said, I don't know, let's make 10 of them. And we sold them for $300, which again, this is 12 years ago. This is a pretty high jump going from a $25 t-shirt to a $300 thing. And there was enough people that bought that those first 10. You know, we're shipping some to the UK, or we're shipping one to New York City, and we're shipping one to the guy that I met at the show. And it ties together this whole idea of like when you create these physical objects and these physical manifestations of a design, people have like visceral and emotional reaction to them when it's a tangible thing. And I think one of the downsides of the web is it's really hard to communicate that through a screen. And I think great designers have done a lot to improve that. We've gone through the whole skeuomorphic phase, rest in peace, old Instagram. But like the buttons and the tactileness. And I think it does still elicit a response when you see something that's designed really well digitally. But there's something about tangible things that people can just immediately pick up, they can hold, they can touch, that they associate with value, or they think about what would this look like in my house? I'd love to display this. I'd love to wear this. And that was just a side experiment. And then we ended up doing a few more runs of those. We ended up making those smaller aluminum ones. That's how I was dipping my toes into this whole like production, manufacturing, material side of building products, as opposed to just a screen printed shirt.
Nice. That's awesome. Okay. I want to take a jump from, this seems to be that we have this era of the start of Ugg Monk and how you went from 150 t-shirts that like you thought were good enough to what seems to be like a rolling business, right? Like you're selling a bunch of shirts, you're selling like merchandise that's like adjacent to it, like posters. There's this mouse pad thing that kind of has a life of its own. There's now this little statue that has a life of its own. And there seems to be a bunch of growth. And my guess is there's some like homeostasis of a really nice small business. Then you decide all of a sudden that you want to, I think the Gather system was the first thing that came along. Was it the to-do cards, or was the to-do cards like a part of the system?
So the original Gather system, so if you go to our site on ugmonk.com, you look at the Gather system, it's going to look very different than the original. Oh, and you actually still have one. That's pretty cool. Yeah. So Michael has the actual original Gather version that I launched on Kickstarter. So that was 2017. And the origin story of that, and hopefully like hearing, for people hearing the connection points, when you tie all these lines together, it looks like one of those crazy maps where the red strings are just connecting. But a zoomed out view of UGMonk doesn't really make any sense unless you backwards engineer it. The origin story for Gather was I had designed or just built an IKEA desk stand. So I took a wood plank from IKEA, found some legs, stained the wood, built it to get my monitor a few inches higher and to create more space on my desk. This was not, again, intended for to make as a product, to produce. Even though I had made wood products, I was like, okay, I can make this for under $50. I can get the parts. I thought it was really nice. I had a place to like put everything and slide my sketchbooks under. And I'm taller, so I liked having my monitor up a little bit higher. I posted a picture of that. Now, this was early Instagram days. And people were like, whoa, what is that stand? When are you selling that? When's that coming out? And same thing. People kept asking, I want the stand. And I was like, well, so I made an article. I think if you Google like UGMonk $50 monitor stand or UGMonk DIY monitor stand, it'll link to an old blog article. I don't know if it's still up. I've revised it a few times since. But people were going to this. So I just told them, here's how you go. Get the supplies. You make this thing. And that was the start of people being interested in my desk and the setup that I had, which I didn't think was anything spectacular because it was very DIY. But so many other designers were asking about, what's that on your desk? What are those speakers? I had gotten the Joey Roth ceramic speakers, which I still have sitting here, which was like a whole thing. And we all saw them and we all wanted them. And it was like a grail item to finally get them. And the combination of these things, people started asking more and more about my workspace. The mouse pad was there and they were saying, what is that mouse pad made out of? I love how it wears in and we're selling these leather mouse pads. And the thing that was missing was some way to organize all the little bits of clutter in between my monitor stand and everything else, all the other peripherals. So I said, I'd love to make something. And it seems like the path of designing for myself has worked where I've found a need that I have. I design something and then I produce it. I didn't know where it was going to go. And this is what really put us on the map as far as changing the whole company structure. Launched the Kickstarter in 2017 for Gather after 2 years of prototyping, working with a manufacturer who's got production facilities, injection molding, magnets, metal fabrication, like all of these different things, trying to learn that side of it. Launched with a goal of $18,000 and we ended up raising like $430,000 and the Kickstarter went crazy. And I was like, okay, this is not like a mom and pop business anymore. We had to outsource the shipping because at the time my mom was still doing the shipping. My parents' basement was our warehouse for the first like decade of UGMonk. And it completely transformed the scale that we were doing things, literally 2 shipping containers worth of product that we produced, which was just totally different. And I mean, I could write a book about all of the things I've learned and things that I messed up on and things not to do in that original Kickstarter campaign and manufacturing. And I've learned so much since then that really started to bring people in for the design objects more than the t-shirts. There's still the t-shirt crowd. There's still people that I get DMs from every single day that say, when are you bringing back the shirts? But the Gather system, the original Gather organizer, was my first original industrial designed product. And it was pretty cool to see people respond to it and have the same need of organizing the clutter. And yeah, so that was 2017. After that was the analog card system and then the new Gather system.
That first Gather set went on Kickstarter. It did really well. What was going through your mind as that was happening? Because you were saying you were still like shipping things out of your like parents' basement. Mm-hmm. There's this probably like a shift in mindset that eventually happens going from, hey, we have boxes full of t-shirts and boxes full of merch. And yes, sure, we designed the art that's on the merch, but this is like an object that now has to be produced.
Yeah.
And you need to control the whole production run. It's not like a one-step production run kind of thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, the expensive tooling, like the molds for the injection molded parts were $30,000. This is more than I've ever spent on any inventory purchase for buying actual inventory. And I had to invest this money in the tools. And I think there was a lot of, wow, this is incredible. I can't believe this is happening. Pinch me moments. And then there was the flip side was like, okay, we have to deliver several thousand of these products to backers that backed this Kickstarter. And you've seen success and horror stories of Kickstarter. People raise $1 million. They realize that their expenses are way too high. The product quality is not there. They have to cancel. People are upset. There's lawsuits. But you have a lot of weight on your back to figure out how to make it, how to do it. And I thought I had all of my ducks in a row and I thought we had everything going to plan. I was working with a company in Texas who had built a factory over in China. I felt good because the transparency that they had with their factory, and they went over there and built it, and there was their employees. So we have this end-to-end connection with the design, manufacturing, and shipping it back to the US. Well, a lot of things definitely did not go as planned. And we ran into quality issues where prototypes looked great. The full run did not look great. We were outsourcing the shipping. So we no longer had our hands on every single product. So we worked with a 3PL to get all of those Kickstarter shipments out, talked to them, went down, had a lot of meetings, inspected product, all of those things. But like, you can only do so much at that scale versus like handling and folding every single shirt and catching all those things. So we weren't able to catch all of the little quality errors and things. And we started to get some feedback from backers. Some of them, most people were really happy with the product and the quality, but then there were some that were like, the pins don't fit into the slots. I can't move the pieces. The wood was peeling, or the finish on the wood was peeling. And it opened up this whole can of worms to be like, oh no, I wonder if the product is not that consistent across all of the units. I spent a couple weeks in a warehouse in Texas with a team of people unboxing 6,000 gather sets, boxing, unboxing, inspecting, setting aside product, going through every single one so that we wouldn't keep shipping product there might have been product that was subpar. Thankfully, a lot of it was really good, but there was no way of knowing except for literally unboxing these things, which I will still have nightmares about pallets and pallets of product in a 110 degree warehouse with no air conditioning. But to do that was the only option to me, because I stood behind the product. We stood behind as a brand, and this is my life. This is the loyal customers that I have. I can't let them down. So even though we lost a ton of money in that process, I think we were able to come out and probably break even after all was said and done. And people that had the product and received a good product loved it. And they're posting pictures of it. And the same validation that we've talked about from the early t-shirts to that gather system. But I just learned that the scale of doing things like that is, it comes at a cost. And to keep quality really high at the level of Apple or Nike or whoever's doing things, and they do things overseas, is not easy as a very small brand. 2 shipping containers to them is nothing. So I learned a lot about what it looks like to scale up. And then also, while margins might be great, it's really hard because I lost control. And the word control was like my ethos, sort of like my mantra for the past probably 5 or 6 years since then, was how can I make things at the quality that we've always made for UGG Monk and continue to scale and continue to grow. Long story short, that meant bringing things back to the US and making things in small batch, doing it locally to keep that quality so that we're not sacrificing quality at the expense just to scale and go big. But it was a wild ride. It was definitely like a big jump from selling shirts, like you said, boxes of t-shirts, 100 orders here, 200 orders there, still a lot of work, but like going to several thousand of these gather parts, investing in tooling and things like that was just a huge jump and a huge learning experience that I've been able to apply a lot of those things to what I'm doing today and even the way that we're building the new gather system.
I want to dig into kind of that next step a little bit, because analog comes after the first gather launch. And I've always observed this pattern, and this is like very much a personal reflection on this, that whenever I have done something that is like really complex and has been a challenge, and I have eventually achieved the challenge and I feel like I have this like moment of joy, I always try to take one step back and do a one time smaller thing, or like a 2 size smaller thing that I'm then comfortable with, just to also show that like, oh yeah, even though you grow in your career and like you grow in like the size and scale of the things that you pick up, it's always really important to go back to the basics or like do something very simple. I think a lot of people tend to redesign their website. Like when they are looking for a new job, I tend to redesign it just purely from like a practice perspective, both like on the back end and the tech side of things, and try and figure out new code toys, as well as trying to like figure out what it should look like and what the story is. And analog is, in for all intents and purposes, it's like a simpler product, right? Like it's a 2-piece physical product, and then the cards are its own product. Was that intentional to go to a simpler design to make this object as quote unquote easily producible as possible versus what you've experienced with a couple of different molds, then also having to have a wooden plate, the magnets and stuff? How was your thinking when you were designing the analog system?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head that it was a bit in response to that, because I didn't want to stop making physical products. I loved working with the materiality and warmth of wood and natural materials. And I think there's not a lot of companies doing that. A lot of tech products are very harsh and very void of any character. And I thought the materials, the ideas that I applied to Gather were still relevant. I just knew that, like, at scale, it's really hard to keep that. The analog card system actually started without any wood products involved. So the origin of that was, I've been using regular index cards, just the standard 3x5 cards, to manage my to-do list for a decade or so. And I had tried journals. I had tried, like, the long reporter style notebooks. I've tried Moleskine journals. I tried all the things. But what worked for me was taking an index card, writing a few things on it, and putting it in a little business card holder, or eventually sticking it in the slot in Gather. So same thing. We joked about it. Like, is this too simple of a product? Can we make Ugg Monk index cards, essentially? Is this something that we can sell? And for a while, we said, no, this is, like, anybody can just buy index cards anywhere. It's not anything special. But the more that I thought about it, and the more that I was able to kind of pull and distill down these productivity principles and aesthetics that we had established a design language for into a product, I made this card system pulling from, like, David Allen's Getting Things Done, where it's like the three buckets: today, next, someday. I think he has other terminology for them. But I wanted to make these three cards. So I wanted to have a list for my tasks for today. I wanted to have a list of tasks that need to get done, but I didn't have to do today, which was the next card. And then I wanted these other cards for, like, my someday goals and ideas. And when someone mentions a book to read, I'll write it down on these cards. So I was using that. I was designing this card system, and I knew I wanted to create some sort of card holder or some way to prop the cards up. But that actually came very late in the process of analog. So analog was just, I was actually going to just launch cards. And it wasn't until I designed this walnut holder that's carved out of a solid block of walnut with a metal divider that magnetically sticks in, applying some of my, like, new found love for industrial design. When I did that and I launched the Kickstarter, yep, he's got one right there, which I love to see. It's probably one of the originals, because you've always been a big supporter. The card holder itself, we bundled with and without the cards on the Kickstarter. But what the card holder does is complete the system. It gives you a place to store the extra cards. It props up the card in front of you for your today tasks. And it has this nice aesthetic quality that you want to leave on your desk. Like, you don't want to put it in a drawer and like a journal or something else, or a spiral bound notebook that you throw away. And when I launched the Kickstarter for that card system, I felt like, it was actually in 2020, so it was amid the pandemic. And there's a whole story behind that about I shot the video myself in my house here, edited it myself because I had to cancel all of my travel plans to produce it. But the card holder was, I think 90%+ of people backed the card holder and the cards. And it became like the analog system was this idea of this beautiful card holder and the cards, how it is a single use item. It completes the, you know, where you store the cards, how it looks. And that whole process was much simpler than going through injection molding and expensive tooling and all of those things. But I will say, we still had issues with quality. We still had problems even doing it domestically, which we were able to resolve, and we were able to work quicker on to get the quality and fine tune those woodworking details. But that was, like, definitely the process, going from really complex, like investing in tooling that I can't change forever, to like, let's make a product that's really simple, doesn't sacrifice on quality or aesthetics, and it serves a purpose. And the biggest difference going from Gather to analog is that analog just struck a chord with so many people, because they were like, I do this already. I use index cards, or I write down three things on a sticky note and I stick it right on the bottom of my monitor. Or they were like, I've tried, like me, and they've tried every digital task manager app under the sun. And it just struck a chord beyond, way bigger than anything else that I'd ever done. Bigger than Gather, bigger than the t-shirts. In contrast, I think we had around 2,000 backers for Gather. I could be wrong. And we had almost 6,500 pre-orders by the time the Kickstarter was done and the time we shipped, in addition to the Kickstarter orders and then the pre-orders. So it definitely, that put us on a whole different level, because people were like, this is what I've always needed. This is what I wanted. We're able to ship that product, got our own warehouse here in Pennsylvania, working with local manufacturers, brought it full circle. So now we have a physical space, and we're making stuff in the US, and we're shipping this product, and analog continues to be our best-selling product.
There's something that I'm reading in between the lines that I would love to dig a little bit into, which is the feeling that happens when you put Gather on Kickstarter and it became a successful campaign, And I was looking at the Kickstarter page, like $265,000 pledged. And then Analog coming along and like almost like hitting $500,000 basically, but like also being like a smaller, a more affordable product price point wise, which means mm-hmm. that the unit count is so much higher. Going back to that point, what was the feeling that you had when you hit the gather goal first and foremost? And then what was the feeling that you had when the campaign had ended?
The gather goal or the Analog goal?
Well, first the gather one, but okay, then yeah. I guess is the Analog one yeah. like had a similar but different take. So I'd love to tease yeah. apart what are the differences in that emotion.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's as a designer and as a creative, it's super validating when you see someone that's paying real money to buy the thing you made, whether it's a digital thing, something that you've designed, graphic design, or it's a theme or it's a physical product. I think we are all wired to, you know, that does feel good when you see that the exchange of money for the thing that you made. So as the Gather one was taking off, the original Gather campaign, it was just like, wow, like, I think this is going to be the new UGMonk. In fact, we actually split off a separate website, had Gather on its own site. I had gotten a call from the Shark Tank producer to be like, hey, we would love you to come on. They had seen the Kickstarter success. Thankfully, I turned it down because we did not have product and our shipping was so delayed and our manufacturing was so delayed, it would have caused more problems. But it was a pivotal time to be like, is this what I want to do? Am I trying to get this product globally with hundreds of thousands of units all around the world? Am I trying to get this in Target? Am I trying to get this in West Elm and furniture stores? And my eyes got big there. So it felt like, wow, like this, the path is basically rolled out for me. The carpet's rolled out. All I have to do is just do this. And then when we ran into those production side of things after the Kickstarter, I realized I don't want to be a CEO of a huge company that's got this giant machine that it's very hard to move and slow moving and it's hard to fix. And got a taste of that and was like, wait, I'm not in this. I always tell people I'd rather have a larger slice of a small pie than a tiny sliver of a massive pie, because the massive pie to maintain is just, it's not what I'm wired for. I still like creating things more than I like just being a CEO, and learning a lot from that. And then seeing Analog in 2020 when I launched that, applying all those learnings, knowing like Analog's probably not going to go as big because it's a small product, it's a much lower price point. But then seeing it take off was like another eye-opening experience of like, okay, this might be the future, because this card system and the idea of digital distraction and what we're facing was resonating so much further. Like the amount of traffic we had on our site, the amount of press publications that we're talking about it, the amount of things coming inbound towards Analog was unlike anything I had ever seen. And that moment was a little bit of a panic moment too, where I was like, okay, how big can we let this thing go? And can we still fulfill the campaign? And of course, it took months longer than we thought, and we had some delays. We did fulfill all the campaign, posted those updates to the backers, like every other Kickstarter campaign. It's okay, this is going to take a little longer. But we were able to come out of that one unscathed. Like we still came out on top on that one, whereas Gather still loomed as a black cloud over us of all of those long days sorting the product, trying to figure out what's going on with the manufacturer, and they're giving us one answer and we're hearing something else, or we're seeing something else. And Analog was definitely a little bit more like, I think we have this figured out. There was complications and there was a lot of learnings, but doing in our control, in-house, fulfilling those orders personally, we got to physically handle every single product. And that was like the game changer for me to have control over that process, even though it was a ton of work bringing in a lot of part-time staff to pack and ship and inspect. Coming away from that one definitely felt more sustainable in the business sense than the Gather launch.
I really enjoy this, because you already said that Analog to date is like the most successful product mm-hmm. that you've launched and you keep on selling. But you decided to take another swing at the Gather system. Is it part like masochism, or is it like this desire to like truly get it right again?
Yeah.
But it's a different product now. It like different materials, like probably lessons learned there as well. What brought you to want to go like for another runaround?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just a glutton for punishment at this point, because I've gone through the ringer so many times. So yeah, I mean, seeing Analog success and seeing that work, was super exciting, still super exciting to this day. We launched in 2020, it's now 2024, continues to be our best-selling product. I've expanded the Analog system to now have Analog weekly cards. I have a bunch of ideas to take it even further that I've been working on in the background. But then with the Gather system, the point of launching the original Gather was to start with the organizer and then build a desk collection around it. After all of the manufacturing woes and setbacks, I was like, I pressed pause. I said, we just got to figure this out. We got to get this kind of done. And I never got to design the monitor stand and the connection, the other accessories that would connect to it. So in the back of my mind, that was always there. 2020 came around. I met an incredible industrial designer named Jack Marple and had put out the word. We were locked at home. No one had anything to do. I put out the word, does anyone do industrial design? I have this product idea. I'd love to collaborate. We ended up connecting through somewhere on the interwebs of Twitter or Instagram and just hit it off. And I explained where Gather had been, how analog was going, and said, I'd love to bring Gather back, but I'd love to do it under certain constraints. One, how do we make this manufacturable in the US? Two, how do we make this without expensive tooling and upfront costs? I don't have $200,000 to put into tooling. And then three, how do we make it a modular system that is built in a way that can be built on over time and we can continue to expand and evolve it? And he took that, those constraints and that brief, and we just started riffing and came up with a bunch of ideas and put an agreement in place and redesigned Gather all the way from the ground up, like scrapped everything we had ever done and said, how do we make this system work? And it ended up being a very different system with this powder coated steel and magnets that hold things in place, still built on a grid system. So all the products relate to each other in a very like isometric way where everything is proportional. And then, yeah, launched that campaign 2022, I believe. I'm losing track of the years. And was a very involved process from the supply chain. So the swings from a complex to simple back to complex. I will tell you that I'm swinging back to a simple product this year. Later this year, I'm launching something that is much simpler to produce and hopefully doesn't have the complications that we've been through for each of the other ones. But yeah, the Gather system that you see today on our site is by far the best version of a product from a craftsmanship and material angle that we've ever produced, and people love it. And it's been a journey getting it built, but it's all connected to the previous iterations of all of the products and learnings that I've gathered.
So you intentionally worked on designing this new Gather system to be less complex, and mm-hmm. it still ended up being complex. Where did it creep in?
Maybe some of the amateur side of not understanding how complex supply chains can get. So when you manufacture a product overseas, they are outsourcing and handling so many different components of a thing. So if it's a plastic part that has some screws and some magnets, they've got factories that can do each one of those things, and they're delivering you the finished good. Now they're doing a lot of that legwork. What I didn't anticipate was how hard it would be to source each component and each material. So we have felt, we have magnets, we have certain type of powder coating that's got this texture to it that's really tactile and nice, and refining that. The metal fabrication, the woodworking, the type of wood that we're using, the type of process, the type of finish. So each one of those actually involves a different vendor and a different supplier. So we're working with probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 different vendors to make the Gather system, bringing it in-house. And then my team is physically doing the assembly. So we're doing that last touch, that QC, where we are applying the felt and the magnets. We're building the boxes that they go in, the packaging experience. The amount of effort that it takes to do that should not be underestimated. Mm-hmm. An insane amount of work and literal sweat and pallets of metal and just a lot of moving physical. I mean, it's manual labor. And mm-hmm. I think as digital designers or even as graphic designers who make a thing and you get a sample of it, this is great. This is like that one ampersand statue. But to make 300 or to make 3,000 of something and to hold that quality is just a completely different ballgame, whether it's overseas or domestic. The learnings now is like we've built a really good supply chain. But to project manage that supply chain, to manage those vendors, to find other vendors when they can no longer meet the quality we want has been a journey, to say the least.
There's obviously like high highs and low lows, like emotionally coming out of all of this. And having gone through these various eras of UGMonk, there's like one thing, maybe one small door that I want to open and then maybe hear your reflections on the whole story, which is that alongside of the products that you're building, creating yourself, and that you're manufacturing yourself, there is now also a pretty sizable e-commerce business where you've curated a set of products as well to go alongside it, like the brown clocks and the Toyo steel toolkit cases and like typical like really like high quality stuff, and especially things that have been designed that have stood the test of time. When did this e-com part intersect with UGMonk? And is that something that you focus on, or do you actually have someone on staff that runs the e-com business so you don't have to worry about it?
I probably should have someone focusing on that, but I'm still very much involved in that process. The way that that came about was, as we were moving from shirts more into this curate or more into these objects, I think the merchandising aspect of brands that I liked, things that were already on my desk, made sense to start carrying them. So I was pointing people to, like, they'd ask, where did you get this object? And I'd say, from this store. Where did you get the speakers? From Joey Roth. Where did you get these? And we said, what if we started bringing those things in? Because at that point, people were looking to me for the curation aspect. To me, I just thought, I can just give you an Amazon link, or I can give you a, or most of them are not on Amazon actually, but I could give you a link to their site. But we had the idea of, what if we brought this stuff in and we physically warehouse and inventory their products? So we set up an account with these different brands, Toyo Steel and Hasami from Japan and Craig Hill in Brooklyn, and bring in those products. But the idea and the concept behind that was to put our products next to the products that we feel are in that cohesive family and that we'd want to be seen with. And then to bring in products that we wouldn't design ourselves. Like, I wouldn't design, I'm not going to reinvent something that's already been perfected. The Braun wall clock. Maybe someday I'll design a wall clock, but I'm not going to try to make it look like a Braun clock. The Toyo toolboxes, they've been selling this exact toolbox for 50 plus years. It looks great. It stood the test of time. The manufacturing is incredible. The story is great. It makes sense to complement what we're doing with those things. Now, how much or how little of the curated objects we sell is going to vary. And we're even talking about, like, pushing more and more of the UGMonk products as our main focus. But at the time, it was just the original Gather, the version one of Gather that we had, plus t-shirts. And then it felt like a big disconnect. So filling in these gaps of really nice pens, really nice desk objects, speakers and things like that, connected it all under one roof. And then now that we've discontinued all of our apparel and t-shirts, it's even more cohesive, because it feels like, while I'm buying the Gather system and these analog to-do cards, I'm going to walk away with this really cool brass desk knife. And I don't need to reinvent the wheel on all of those things. So that's how that came about. A lot of people have asked, and I think it is a little bit confusing, and it's something we're working through. Like, are you guys a retailer, or are you a design studio? Do you just sell really nice things, or do you make really nice things? And that's something that I'm currently working on. Like, how do we clearly communicate who we are? And then, oh, by the way, we also sell these really nice things made by other people.
Nice. Well, my final question for you is, you've been doing this for, it's over 15 years now,
I think. Yep.
How do you reflect on this path as, like, that red line that runs through it? And is there a kind of a wish, or like a kind of an aim that you have beyond the tactical of, like, how do we position our own products versus products that we merchandise? But is there, like, a North Star that you have that you want to look into for the rest of this decade, I guess, which I guess probably sounds like a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, people ask me quite often, what are you going to do when you're done with UGMonk? Would you ever sell it? What's the next stage? My answer is, usually I'm going to put one foot in front of the other and see where it leads me. Because had you asked me 15 years ago if I'd be selling a desk organization system that's built by local Amish and Mennonite metal fabricators in Pennsylvania, that was never going to be on the radar. So I think part of it is, like, holding those plans with open hands and just saying, let's see where this goes. But my goal as a designer, and where I'd love to see the brand, is, like, I have so many other ideas that I want to prototype and get out into the world. Some may flop, but some may stick, that I want to see those out there, and I want to see which ones people resonate with. I want to get them out from my head into the physical world. And trying to create space to create is my main thing. The running a business at the size we are now is very different than when I just sold 50 t-shirts in a week or something like that. So I'm trying to balance the CEOing and the designing, and figuring out, how do I become more of a designer, and how do I get to spend more time with the ideas and bringing them to life and expanding on some of the things that have resonated, like the analog cards, the Gather system, and then X, Y, and Z that I'm working on right now, because that's the part that still is the most rewarding. Like, the dollars and cents from e-commerce and trying to run Facebook ads is taxing, and it wears on you, and it's there's the highs and lows, but the creating of the physical thing is still, like, where I get the most joy, and I love that process, which ties it back to the very start of this conversation, where we're talking about what I did as a kid. And it's like that part of creating things is still, if I took the business aside and just said, what do I love the most? I still love that product journey.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your story. This was really awesome. And I loved all the small things that I learned along the way as well that were filling in the gaps, having seen you start this and grow this over time. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. I mean, I shared a lot of things here that I feel like I haven't really talked about. So hopefully people got some inside baseball on this podcast.
Amazing. I love it. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you're looking for some other great episodes to check out, you can find them on fullstackwhatever.com. Thanks a lot, and I'll see you soon.